hospice and DNR care, handling patient refusals responsibly, and rural teen pregnancy rates explode. Plus, there's more to see from special segments we've recorded at EMS Today 2013. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of The Medicast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is The Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Medicast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's show. We've got a great episode coming up for you, and I hope you'll stick around and check out all of the items coming up. We have several news items to catch your attention, including a look at some key thoughts on EMS, DNR, and hospice patient care. Plus, in this episode, we'll be bringing you another special interview segment from EMS Today 2013. We recorded there in the ProMed Network podcast studio. That'll be coming up after this week's news segment, so stay tuned. First, though, please remember that you can follow up with me and follow up on all of the information from this episode over at the Medicast blog. That's at medicast.com/blog. You'll find a show notes link right at the top of the page. That'll take you down to the most recent episode, and you can scroll down and find other episodes from previous weeks listed below that. So there are links there that you can follow up on. I cover things very quickly in the show, but you can get more in-depth information by following up on the tip links, the news items, and everything else that we have available for you in the episodes. So you can follow up on that information there. If you want to get back in touch with me directly, you can certainly do that. You can leave a comment on the site, or you can shoot me an email. I love to hear from you, and I respond back to every email that comes in. So please keep those emails coming. You can catch up with me by email at podmedic@mac.com, and I look forward to hearing from you. So please, please send me an email today. I think that's enough introduction and contact info. There'll be some more later on at the end of this episode, but for now, let's get on with the rest of this episode and head on in to this week's news. Kicking off the news this week is a look at an article I found over at emsworld.com looking at education around EMS do not resuscitate orders and hospice patients. It's a continuing education article co-written by our good friend and fellow ProMed Network podcaster, Greg Fries. Greg is the host of the EMS Educast and Medical Author Chat. He also works at centerlearn.com as their director of education. I like this article because it teaches us about a group of patients we see quite a bit. You know, I don't think we don't see a lot of elderly DNR patients. At least I know I do, so I'm sure you do as well. But sometimes I think we fail to treat them adequately because we don't understand the purposes and nuances of a DNR order. I know in my area we have discussions about EMS providers who fail to understand the scope of a DNR order and the true meaning of palliative care for these fragile patients. Greg quotes the World Health Organization definition of palliative care as, quote, the active total care of patients whose disease is not responsive to curative treatment, control of pain, of other symptoms, and of psychological, social, and spiritual problems is paramount. The goal of palliative care is achievement of the best quality of life for patients and their families, end quote. That's where many of us fall down in our care of these patients. Palliative care allows us to reduce pain and discomfort for these patients. It means that a patient with a broken hip with a DNR order in their chart still gets morphine or something else like it for pain. You don't just splint them with a scoop stretcher and take them into the hospital writhing in pain the whole way there. I'm sure if you check out this article, it's going to help you in some way. You may not be like I just talked about, but you may learn something, and I certainly know that Greg's a great educator. So you can find better ways to take care of these types of patients, provide better care and documentation for yourself. So check it out. podmedic@mac.com. Now, I will keep your information confidential, but if you've had a close call or something and would like to report on it to me, maybe I can share some lessons you've learned with the Medicast community and be able to help somebody else from avoiding the same problem. So have you ever heard the phrase, you call, we haul? Well, it comes with a certain mindset, and one that I think has seen its time pass in EMS. All too often, however, I think that our providers and service focus on us as a transportation service and not as a healthcare service. The worst part is they are often the ones who complain the loudest when patients who use us as a taxi service tie them up and make it so they don't have time for other calls. So we need to make sure that we are handling this appropriately. And this comes back to the challenge of responsible patient refusal policies and making sure that we are doing a complete patient assessment and providing them the information they need to make an informed medical decision like refusing care. I'm going to butcher this name coming up, but Art Say wrote an article recently at EMS1.com about getting stuck in the you call, we haul mindset. He was referring to an article about a Spokane, Washington incident involving a man who died in police custody after earlier refusing treatment by paramedics. Now, the paramedics involved are being questioned about whether they should have gone ahead and transported this patient to the hospital, even though he exhibited no immediate signs or symptoms of any kind of problem. The man, he claimed to have ingested some kind of poison, maybe methamphetamines or some other kind of drug, and of course later died in police custody at the jail. Now we're not sure if it's related to that or related to something else, but I don't like to second guess providers in situations like this, so I'm not going to say whether they did the right or wrong thing. But what I prefer to do is look at how we can protect ourselves in similar situations. Art's article points to the patient's family asking, why didn't we do our jobs and take this guy to the hospital? And that's that you call, we haul mentality. I want to point out to you that you can provide a better protective barrier for your own exposure to problems like this, not just by taking everybody to the hospital, but by making sure you understand how refusals work in your system and are really good at documentation. So a good education on refusal policies and really good documentation can protect you. I write a lot longer narrative for patient refusals than I do when I transport a patient. I want to make sure I document assessment findings and everything I told the patient as much verbatim as possible so that I can back up my claim that the patient's refusal was based on an informed decision. You can protect yourself from that you call, we haul mindset while still enabling yourself to take a responsible patient refusal. There's got to be a happy medium for this, and I think that's what Art was trying to say in his article. Finally, in the news this week is an article on teen pregnancy and childbirth rates in different parts of the country. Does where you work mean you are more likely to have emergency maternity calls than in other parts, you know, where a child is having a child? Well, apparently it can make a difference where you are. A recent study based on data from the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, shows that rates for teen pregnancy and childbirth are higher in rural areas than in corresponding suburban and urban areas. It's 1/3 higher, in fact, than those other areas. The good news is that overall, the birth rates for teens are down all across the country over the last 20 years, but the rates seem to fall much faster and farther in city and suburban areas. Now, how does that affect EMS? Well, because teen parents are also at greater risk for complicated pregnancies and often have less prenatal care, these patients are more likely to have pregnancy with related emergencies and complications. If you're in a rural area, you might want to spend a little more time reviewing emergency childbirth protocols and procedures than somebody in a suburban or urban area, our EMS brothers and sisters there. While you might not have the same call volume, you are more likely, on a percentage basis, to see teen pregnancy, teen labor, and teen delivery of an infant. Preparation is everything, and information makes you powerful, right? So be ready for what you're most likely to see in your system. And that's something you can learn when you read articles like this and think about how you'd apply the information you see there to what you do. Time to get on into this week's tip segment, and we've got another special video segment recorded in the podcast studio at EMS Today 2013, last week at Washington, D.C. Special thank you right off the bat to EMS Today, GEMS.com, and Physiocontrol for making this possible. They sponsored the ProMed Network going in there and setting up our podcast studio, and we'll have more of these segments coming up in future episodes here on the MedicCast, so stay tuned, and we've got a lot of great discussions, and you can find all of the recorded information we have from that conference all available for you over at the ProMed Network in the ProMed Network blog, so you can head over there and check out all of the recorded segments from the other podcasters as well. Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, back with some more from the Medic Cast, and we're here in the EMS Today 2013 Exhibit Hall in the GEMS Connect area. You can hear some other noise around. They've got a cooking contest going on next door. They've got the Zoll booth right next door to us with showing us their CPR devices and all of their great monitors. And of course, we're here in the Physio Control sponsored podcast studio here at EMS Today, and sponsored also by GEMS and Penwell. So we want to thank them for having us. I've got Scott Keir here with me today. And we're going to be talking about a topic that came up related to a question I got from one of my audience members who checked in and wanted to talk about changing jobs in EMS. And we don't want to talk about specific systems, but a lot of people know you've moved to a new system.
Yes.
And I thought it'd be a great opportunity to talk to you a little bit about how that process works and a little bit about some of the things maybe you've learned moving from one system to another. So, Scott, give us everybody a little bit of background on who you are, where they can find you, and
well, like you said, my name is Scott Keir. I'm been a paramedic for 12 years, been a blogger and involved in social media for the last three at medicsbk.com. If you want to read my stuff, you can check it out there. Ever since I got into this whole social media thing and started doing the conference schedule and everything. You know, you start seeing other systems, you start realizing that there's life outside of where you're working. And I had some career changes go on last year that kind of pushed me a little more towards the decision of, well, let me try something different, let me go out and find a new system, which really was the biggest hurdle, because I think the biggest hurdle for anybody who's trying to change where they're at in this field is breaking out of your comfort zone. And it forced me as a 12-year medic to break out of my comfort zone and, you know, go out and find a new system. And this past December, I started with them, and I am happy as can be now.
Well, that's the key. But, you know, the days are gone when you work in the same system from, you know, birth to death in EMS. And people are changing their jobs. They're moving to critical care systems, hospital transport systems, flight medic systems. There's so many opportunities out there in EMS for providers who want to advance their career and move on. What were some of the things you looked at before you settled on where you ended up landing?
Well, once I decided I wanted to make the move, the most important thing for me at that point was finding a place where I could make a career out of EMS. And some of the things that were important to that, you know, for me is 20 years down the road, where am I going to be with wear and tear on my body? Where am I going to be with a retirement plan? Mm-hmm. And the system that I ended up finding is a non-transport intercept system, so I'm not lifting and moving patients as much as I was. I have a pension built into my system. From the more short-term side of it, I started looking at protocols. I wanted someplace that did aggressive medicine. I wanted someplace that had the progressive protocols, had a medical director that was involved, and really put more of the patient care in the hands of the medic, rather than looking at the medic as, you know, just the primary access to the healthcare system, the means by which to get to it. You know, right. It should instead be the first step of being involved in the healthcare system. And I really found all of those things.
You found them all. And did you recommend somebody needs? You really needed to ask those questions, though. When you go to, I think people were afraid to sometimes list these questions, write them down even, mm-hmm. and make sure you ask those questions of the different systems you visit, because otherwise, how are you going to know?
Correct. And the thing is my list of things that I was looking for is going to be completely different than yours, than your listeners. And everybody is going to have their own set of priorities. And the thing to remember is you're going to look at EMS systems around the country, and there is no perfect system that exists. So what you as a medic, as an EMT, as a provider need to realize and figure out is what is going to be the perfect system for you? Mm-hmm. Where are you going to fit best? Because there is so many different delivery models out there right now. You can really take that set of values and find something there somewhere that's going to work for you. And it's just a matter of taking the time to search it out and find it.
How important is it to identify for yourself what you can bring to someone else's system?
It's pretty vital. And again, I guess that all depends on how much you really want to stick your neck out there.
Yeah.
I've always been the kind of person who wants to be involved. you know, I want to be on those focus groups that are trying to progress protocols and pick equipment. Mm-hmm. You got to find the places that have the right, and I'm going to use a term that Skip Kirkwood uses frequently, the horizontal job opportunities.
Right.
You want to find something that's going to offer you as broad of a base as you want. And I think that that's the most vital part of that.
So when you were looking around, what were some of the deal breakers? Some of the things that you really just to underline that you were going to be looking for that had to be there.
For me it was established longevity. It was finding a system that could support me as a 20-year medic, a 25-year medic.
Okay.
And I can tell you just from working 3 months in the system, I've worked with 20-year medics, 25-year medics, 30-year medics, 2-year medics, and there's such a variety. And you know, you see a 25-year provider who is still incredibly engaged in the system and wants to be there and provide patient care, and it's fantastic. And that was the kind of that spoke volumes to me about where I ended up. Is I wanted to find some place that could set a base for me to still be with this in the same system 25 years down the road.
So where do you find these people? You know, I mean, that's all right, great. We know what we want to find in a job. We're out there looking for a new gig as a medic or an EMT. Where do we find these opportunities? Do we just look in the back of GEMS magazine and search there, or are there other opportunities?
That is a good place to start. You know, the GEMS magazine is a good place to start. GEMS Connect is another excellent place to start. There's enough social media outlets out there where you can find somebody who works someplace and ask them some question. I was very, very fortunate to where I had a friend who worked in the system I moved to, so I was able to get a very unfiltered view of it from him. But you know, you got to find somebody who can ask those questions to and get not exactly the right answers, but get the completely honest answers. And then even coming to a conference like this, you walk around the conference floor, and you're going to find, you know, everybody here has a lanyard on. That lanyard for most of us says where we're from, where we work, and what we do. And you know, everybody in EMS is relatively friendly. We're one big family. So if you ask somebody a question about their service, chances are they're going to answer it. If they're proud enough to be here and be as engaged in EMS to take the time and come to these major conferences and then put who they are and where they're from on that lanyard, then chances are they're going to be willing to talk about it too.
And I think that's the hidden benefit of a lot of these conferences. You know, so often employers and especially first-time attendees, they focus all about the sessions. I'm going to be in the sessions. I want to learn this. I want to learn that. And don't get me wrong, the sessions are important. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great education going on here. But I think the hidden benefit, some of the things that happen at these events that people don't appreciate, are all the people you meet, all the networking that happens. I always encourage people, when you're standing in line at an event like EMS Today and you're waiting to get your coffee, you're waiting to get something to eat, you should be turning around and talking to the person in front of you, the person in back of you, and getting to know these other systems. Because you don't know, you might get a business card from somebody who is going to be made chief of their department in 5 years, and when you run into them again, they're going to be looking for somebody to fill a job, and they remember you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that really cannot be stressed enough. I mean, I'm just here this year on an exhibit hall pass. And you know, to have the opportunity to go around and talk to people and just those networking opportunities is just absolutely amazing. It's fun, it's informative, and it all just kind of comes together. And that's, to me, is you're exactly right, the hidden benefit. That's the lesser advertised but so important benefit to being at these conferences.
Yeah, they call them hallway conferences sometimes. You know, the hallway sessions, that the undisclosed sessions.
Mm-hmm.
I find, you know, you can be a fly on the wall and hear two medical directors talking about changes in their system and really get some insights into some of the upper level outlook for ways systems are approached.
And then they make themselves so available and they're so approachable that you can walk up to them and just have a conversation about what you heard. I remember down in Dallas a couple years ago when they had that big Texas barbecue. A friend of mine, Brad Buck, looks over at the bar and sees Dr. Wesley standing there by himself having a beer. So what did Brad do? He had a question for him. He walked up and had a 20-minute conversation, walked away with a card and an email contact and all sorts of stuff just because he took the initiative to do that. And you know, the person he approached was so approachable that it just turned into a conversation, and it was exactly what they wanted.
And I keep I tell people all the time, don't be afraid of your medical director. Don't be afraid of your ER docs. They are most often there to educate you. They want to educate. They want you to be better at doing what you do because you bring them patients that are in better condition. And so it's a win-win situation, and they're all part of really the EMS brotherhood. You know, they're part of our system.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And you get that full picture of an EMS system, and you get that full picture of EMS as an industry when you get involved with those people and you talk to those people.
So shifting gears just a little bit, as we start to wind down here, but what do you think about that person who's coming into their very first job? I mean, have you been in a position where you've had to train new people?
And, oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
And so how do you work with them? How do you recommend somebody who's looking for their first job in EMS with really doesn't have the experience to set the stage for what they want to do with regards to what their future's going to be? They're too brand new for that. So right. how do you counsel somebody to look for a job in that situation?
Well, I think the key there, one of the keys is if you can find a system that allows ride-alongs, get out there and see a couple different delivery models, see a couple different systems. I think that's very key. There's a lot of services out there that are becoming considerably more comfortable with allowing people to get on their trucks and do ride-alongs. You know, that HIPAA fear is kind of starting to go away a little bit with those services because they realize now 10 years in that it's like, oh, well, geez, we're really okay. I guess we can let these people on our trucks. It's not going to be a problem. So I really think that is a big one. Again, publications, conferences, meeting people, talking to people, not being afraid to reach out to somebody and ask a question. And I think that's really the key. You got to do your homework. You know what I mean? And you know, you might not be able to hit that dream service right away because of experience requirements, you know, the alphabet soup you might need after your name in order to work there. But find, you know, so you might have to find someplace where you can get a year or two of experience first, and you can't be afraid to do that. You know,
And don't blow off opportunities that come along, I think, because you don't think they're going to be right, because often you just don't know.
Right.
And I know Greg Fries is famous for talking about the fact that he thinks everybody should ride in an interfacility transport unit for a period of time because they gain so much more insight into the overall health condition of patients and other medical conditions and being able to really assess patients in a different way so that when you get out in the field in an emergency setting, you have a better understanding of what somebody that has an irritable bowel syndrome. You know what that is. You've transported those patients, but now you have one in an emergency setting. You know what that is. You know how to deal with it. You know what to expect, and you know how to apply what you know about emergency care to a specific patient problem.
And you're also in those settings. You're also presented with extensive medication lists, extensive history lists, and when you get out and you walk into that house and you see that you have a patient who's taking lisinopril, you say, "Oh, I've seen that before. Where did I see that? What was it for?" Mm-hmm. It sparks those little things in you. And really, I told all my new EMTs in the old system that I worked in, one of the best ways to practice your vital signs, practice more, in my opinion, difficult things like lung sounds, was to get onto a non-emergency truck and, hey, you have a patient there, take an extra blood pressure while you're bouncing down the road. Take a really good listen to those lung sounds. Don't be afraid to do that assessment as part of that transport.
And don't save your assessment skills for just those opportunities or those times when you really need to use that skill. In other words, I'm only going to listen to lung sounds on those patients that have respiratory issues. Well, you definitely need to do it during those situations. But how do you know what normal is if you don't listen to lung sounds on every single patient? Even the guy with the cut on his hand, take the opportunity to listen to their lung sounds. Mm-hmm. And that way your ears can sense there's something that's not right there. Even if you can't put a finger on it and name it, you know that their lungs don't sound the way they should sound.
Exactly. Yeah, well, you can really say that with anything. It's kind of funny because it's like you can look at 50 abnormal EKGs, but the best way to spot an abnormal EKG is to know what a non-diagnostic EKG looks like.
Right.
You know. So you're exactly right. You need to be able to do those little assessment pieces and know what the baseline should be, the baseline should sound like, so that way when you start hearing those things that aren't supposed to be there and, you know, that extra little rattle or something, you're able to identify it.
So what's coming up on the horizon for you? I know you've got some, now you're settled in a new system. You've kind of gotten your feet under you.
Yes.
Are you going to be doing anything else?
A lot more writing. I'm already back into that, which makes me very, very excited. You know, the passion is always there, but when you take a little bit of time and you do that relocation and you're spending time, getting certifications, recertifying things, takes up a considerable amount of time. So now that I'm through that, I'm going to be writing a lot more at medicsbk.com. I talked to Chris Montero last night, and we're going to be doing a little more of a full court press on the EMS garage side
great,
of things,
great.
Which I'm incredibly excited about.
That's awesome.
Mean, it's
anytime you want me on, just let me know.
Absolutely.
I'd love to come in there and throw my 2 cents worth.
Absolutely. In. And, I owe a lot to you and Chris and everybody over the ProMed Network. You guys have been very good to me. So it's nice to be able to have the time to get involved again.
It's great. I mean, I'm glad you're writing again. I just actually just did a feature on the MedicCast on one of your articles, the sticky test.
Yes, yes.
Because I just, I thought it was incredibly astute observation that, I know a lot of people that love those black nitrile gloves.
Yeah.
But how do you see blood against the black background?
Exactly. not talking about the leather gloves, but the right. actual patient treatment gloves. Why would you put black gloves on your hands?
Yeah.
What are you running your hands through? How can you look at your hands and see what they're in?
Yep.
You stick your hands in a puddle of water versus a puddle of blood, and you look at the two, they're going to look the same.
They're looking the same. So great idea, and just love that article, and I just actually featured it on the show because I was just like struck by, I'd forgotten all about it. I hadn't forgotten about doing the sticky test, but I'd forgotten about just educating about it.
Right.
And just you brought it all back to mind, which is I think one of the reasons there's just so many great EMS blogs to be reading out there, including MedicSBK. But
thank you.
It's one of the reasons that it's important to get out there and read them is because I've been doing this a long time and I learn something new from every blog post I read. You, Kelly Grayson, John Broyles, everybody that are out there writing, they've got a lot of great things to say and a lot of good reminders for everybody.
Thank you. I appreciate that greatly. It's a passion of mine, and it's something that I've always enjoyed writing, but now to be able to apply the writing to my career, and it's very, very humbling when people say things like that to me, or I get comments, or I get emails, or, my college professors are calling me and saying, "Hey, I read what you wrote." You know what I mean? Those things for me, that's a very humbling experience. And it's really the best payoff to doing that.
So you got an episode you're going to be recording here later on today.
Yes.
You're the host.
The co-host.
Co-host. What are you covering?
The host is actually a guy by the name of David Aber, who was my FTO in my new system.
Okay.
The show is called EMS Classroom Conundrums. And we're going to be talking about the evolution of EMS. We actually have a few professors from, again, Springfield College, where I graduated from, who are down here in the show. And we're going to kind of address the evolution of EMS education. What was it like to teach, the experienced provider 20 years ago versus the person who might not have quite as much experience who's walking into a medic class today? Where are those differences? How do you see the adult educator evolving? So I think it's going to be a really great, really informative show. Dave is a great host. He's a incredibly intelligent guy. So, we're looking forward to getting him up here.
We got
to
get
him.
If he's got a new show, we got to get him on the ProMed Network.
Absolutely.
Get that out there. That's great. Scott, tell everybody where they can find you online.
You can find me at my blog, medicsbk.com. I'm on Twitter, medicsbk. You can email me, medicsbk@gmail.com. And pretty soon in the coming weeks, look for me at emsgarage.com.
Excellent. Excellent. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you again for being such important parts of the MedicCast community. Keep in touch with me. Let me know what you're doing. Keep in touch with everything that's going on in the show over at mediccast.com/blog. You can find all kinds of great information over there. And I hope you'll continue to participate by leaving comments on the site, shooting me emails, leaving comments in other places. So you can find all of that information by heading over to the MedicCast site. And of course, you can also find the email newsletter form there, so you can get all those links and things sent right to your email inbox. And all of that's available for you on the right-hand side of the site.
If you want to get back in touch with me using other methods, you can of course reach me by email, podmedic@mac.com, or check me out on most social media sites under the handle Podmedic. So twitter.com/podmedic, facebook.com/podmedic. And of course, don't forget, you can also become a fan of the MedicCast fan page on Facebook. We're actually getting close to 4,000 fans. We are over 3,700, almost 3,800 probably by the time you get this. And it's exciting. So if you haven't already become a fan of the show over there, make sure you head over to facebook.com/MedicCast and become a fan of the MedicCast by clicking the like button right there at the top of the page. That will go ahead and close out this episode. I want to remind you, every episode comes out here on a Monday morning, so it's ready for you to start your EMS week. Make sure you subscribe to the show via iTunes, the iOS podcasting app, or other resources like the email, so that you can get it sent to you when episodes are updated. That's it for me. I'll have the latest for you coming up next week. But in the meantime, I want you to remember that I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I want you to stay safe by remembering Scene Safety and BSI.